Welcome to Down Among the Donkeys, a podcast from the Donkey Sanctuary. In 13 episodes, we are telling the story behind the founding of one of the biggest equine charities in the world. Down Among the Donkeys by Dr. Elizabeth Svensson. Chapter 4, The Legacy. I must have gone very pale because suddenly Neil's arm was round my shoulder. Mr. Holman hadn't stopped talking. "I am sorry to advise you that Miss Philpin of Reading has died," he continued, "and you have been named as a residuary legatee. She has made a special clause relating to the donkeys, and this is that you are to take as many as you can, and those you're unable to take are to be shot." I broke in. "Oh, you can't do that. Whatever you do, you mustn't shoot any donkeys." But Mr. Holman's voice was still continuing. "We should like to know what arrangements you would like to make for Miss Philpin's funeral, and whether you would like her to be buried or cremated." I was aware of Neil saying, "What, darling? What's happened? What's going on?" And I silently passed the telephone to him and sat with my head in my hands. Obviously, Niels was getting the same information as I had received, and I have never seen him looking so worried in his life. Niels tapped me, "Darling, he wants to know what we are to feed them on tomorrow, weekly," and passed the telephone back to me. "Mr. Holman," I said, "is there no food there at all?" Mr. Holman cleared his throat and said, "About 25 bales of hay, Mrs. Svensson, and then there is nothing." I sat thinking for a moment. "Mr. Holman, there's no way you can shoot the donkeys," I said again. After promising to phone the following morning, I rang off, and Niels and I sat looking at each other. It had to be a nightmare. I was convinced it couldn't really be happening, but Niels, with his practical side never deserting him, suddenly said, "I think it's time for a cup of coffee." And we went into the kitchen and made the strongest cup of coffee with the most sugar I think I have ever had. 204 donkeys seemed an absolutely impossible number, but we knew we had to find a way to take them in. Most of the night was spent discussing the problems and regretting the questions that we hadn't asked at the time. It seemed that every card in the pack was stacked against us, and I don't think either of us slept very much. Every morning at 7:30, the children, all of them, came into our bed. Fortunately, we invested in a big square bed early on in our marriage, and we all enjoyed the early morning romp before school started. This morning, however, was different, and the children immediately sensed that something was wrong when they came into the bedroom. "Whatever are you going to do, Mummy?" said Lisa, sitting on the bed, her face glum with concern. "My goodness," said Paul, "where can we put 204 donkeys?" "I'll have one in my room," said Sarah happily, who thought it was all a great joke. But none of them could raise a smile from Niels or me. The first thing Niels said was, "You'll have to let me do all the hotel work, and you will have to concentrate on the donkeys. I'll help as much as I can, but obviously one of us will have to keep the business going, otherwise there'll be no money for anybody. Just keep telephoning me and let me know what's happening today, and I will be home for lunch as soon as I can." And so saying, Niels got up quietly and went up to the hotel. "Would you like Miss Philpin buried or cremated?" was Mr. Holman's first question when I rang later on. "Has she no relatives at all?" I queried. "Surely somebody must know her better than me. I have only met her twice." "I'm sorry, no," said Mr. Holman. "You're the only residuary legatee. With one or two very small exceptions, everything's been left to you." "Oh dear," I replied. "In that case, I think probably we'd better bury her, and then, If at a later stage we find she would have wished to be cremated or any relatives appear that can give us guidance, we can always have another service. Very well, said Mr. Holman. I will arrange for a church service at Woodley Church where she lived. Could you tell me a little more about the financial situation? I asked, somewhat anxiously. There was Miss Philpin's house, Springfield, which was in fact a very derelict cottage. Her own private account was overdrawn, as was the Helping Hand Animal Welfare League Donkey Sanctuary, and some £8,400 was owing. A demand had been made to the executors by a Mr. Light for payment for donkeys, and some of Miss Philpin's employees had already phoned to ask about back pay due and wages for recent work. The Barclays Bank Trust had been made executors of the will, and they would for the time being collect any assets of the charity which might appear and pay any pressing bills out of the money that was received. I walked slowly up to the hotel and sat in Neil's office, telling him what had happened. Well, he said, you must go to Reading as soon as possible and try to sort things out. It's going to be impossible from here until you've actually seen the situation for yourself. And so, very miserably, I went home and packed a suitcase, said goodbye to the children, and drove to Reading. I booked in at a local hotel, and the first thing in the morning went round to meet Mr. Holman and his assistant, Miss Jarrett. They were both exceptionally nice, and I felt much happier once we could all sit together, talking the problem over. Mr. Holman, bless him, had made all the arrangements for the funeral, and I arranged for two wreaths to be sent, one a very simple wreath of palm leaves with the inscription, From All Her Donkeys, and the other, From Mr. and Mrs. Svensson to the Donkey's True Friend. The next morning was the funeral, and I did wish Niels had been able to come, but somebody had to look after the children, the hotel, and the donkeys. The funeral was extremely sad and very pathetic. I knew nobody there, and as chief mourner, it was a very peculiar situation. The vicar gave public words of praise for a woman who had devoted almost the whole of her 83 years of life to the donkeys, and who had worked through a personal fortune and had died in total poverty. Mr. Holman and I drove out to the sanctuary together, and I was quite horrified to see that there weren't in fact 204 donkeys, rather more like 80 or 90. What had happened to the rest? Most of them were being boarded out, it seemed, in various parts of the country, such as Wales and Bristol. And the people who were looking after them were being paid between £2 and £3 per donkey per week for their care. This meant bills coming into the sanctuary weekly, and there were, of course, no funds available at all to meet them. Mr. Rivers, who had been in charge of the donkeys, was willing to stay on for some weeks, and I agreed to pay his wages myself. We arranged for the vet to keep an eye on the donkeys until I was able to get them back to Ottery St. Mary. There was, in fact, enough hay for 2 or 3 weeks, no hard feed at all, and nowhere near sufficient grass, since the whole sanctuary was being run over only about 16 acres of land. To add to the confusion, it appeared that Miss Philpin was already being sued for the grazing rights because she hadn't paid the rent for some months. After lunch, we drove out to Springfield, Miss Philpin's home. There is no way I can describe the derelict cottage. At one time, some 10 years ago, Miss Philpin had also looked after stray dogs, and there was ample evidence that they had inhabited the house. A camp bed lay in one room, with a candle on a saucer next to it, and the only furniture was upturned tea chests. A candle and small Primus cooking stove stood on another tea chest, and in this one room Miss Philpin must have lived. The stench was indescribable. By the time all the debts were paid off and the house sold, there wasn't going to be much left in the kitty. but hopefully enough to meet the new demands now coming in. It was absolutely amazing over the next few days how many telephone calls and letters came from people claiming Miss Philpin had owed them money. It seemed endless, and it was so difficult to determine the genuine claims from those obviously trying it on. A telephone call from the charity commissioners in London advised me on the best way to settle these problems, and they were immensely helpful, arranging for one of their assistant commissioners to come down to go through my books and to talk to me. He arrived on the 26th of June, and it was very clear that the Charity Commission were concerned to ensure that the affairs of the Helping Hand Animal Welfare League Donkey Sanctuary were put into working order. He told me that letters had been written to Miss Philpin, pleading with her to appoint new trustees to assist in her difficulties, but by then Miss Philpin had reached the stage and age when small matters like this to her just didn't count, as long as she could keep her donkeys going. She had died before appointing new trustees. The obvious desperate need was to bring the 84 donkeys from Reading to Devon, and so our charity wrote formally offering the help of the South Western Donkey Sanctuary under special terms agreeable to Barclays Trust as executors and to the charity commissioners. We would amalgamate the two charities, and Niels and I would have another two trustees, so that we had a sound basis on which to work. Judith Forbes and Rosalind de Wesselow, who were already helping us, both agreed, and we were delighted. After the commissioner left, I went for a long walk to clear my mind, and on the way back heard Clive calling from the garden. I ran to see what had happened, and found that for some strange reason Jem, who had been having a roll in the field, had got one of her legs caught in some wire netting and was unable to get up. Between us, we managed to pull her free, and to my horror, I managed to twist my back. By the next morning, I was in agony, and so the big donkey removal was delayed until the following week. Colin Pleas, who had helped us in the past, arranged for his three biggest wagons to be available. Desperate phone calls to Judith Forbes brought the offer of one of their large barns, which was a tremendous help as it meant all the donkeys could be in one place, isolated together whilst we had time to sort them out. Daily conversations with Miss Jarrett or Mr. Holman highlighted so many problems relating to the estate it just seemed impossible. Miss Philpin had advertised for her donkey sanctuary, and donations were coming in steadily. The Charity Commission thought that long term, by amalgamating the charities, we would in fact become financially sound, although in the initial stages we would have to take over all Miss Philpin's charity debts. Every post that came seemed to bring about a little bit of bad news. A letter from the Woodley branch of Miss Philpin's bank drew my attention to the overdraft of the Donkey Sanctuary account, and another from the post office indicated mail had been stolen in the past, and they now had managed to find one of the culprits who was being prosecuted. Redundancy payments for the employees of Miss Philpin were pressing, and I was having quite a job sorting out the amounts due to each man. By the second weekend after Miss Philpin's death, I felt absolutely dreadful. Our whole life had been upturned. I hardly had time to look at my own donkeys in the yard, or my children, or my husband, and the paperwork was building up at an impossible rate. Our dear friend, Guy Thornley, had become tired of his motorboat, and the three of us had bought a yacht called Bando Here, as Niels and I had always loved sailing. So on that weekend I sailed away from it all to have 48 hours of relief out at sea. It was wonderful just to have some freedom, and when I got back on Monday, the problems could be looked at in perspective. The biggest job was bringing the donkeys back from Reading, and what a trek it was. We left at 4 in the morning with the three wagons and arrived at the Reading Sanctuary at 9:30. 26th of July was a pouring wet, cold day. As we drove down the long track into Springfield, little groups of donkeys were huddled in the rain, either in the shantytown shelters or under trees in the fields. At the best of times, donkeys can be difficult to load, especially donkeys who have been in trouble in the past. To many of them, wagons bring back memories of cruelty and terror, and it took us 4 hours to load them up. It was a very long journey for the donkeys, and the wagons had to stop frequently so that we could make sure they were all travelling standing up and that none was in any serious trouble. At long last, the wagons rolled into the large barn that Mrs. Forbes was renting us. It was filled with clean straw, the racks were full of sweet hay, and fresh water sparkled in the large troughs. We opened the back of the first wagon, and the donkeys gratefully struggled down the ramp and into their new quarters. It was very gratifying to stand and watch them walking round the large, airy barn, obviously happy to see their new surroundings. But what a mixed bunch they were. Some were obviously very young and very thin, others elderly and tired. When the wagons had left, we walked round through them all. Poor Miss Philpin, it was quite obvious that the donkeys she had taken towards the end of her life had not had the love and attention she had bestowed on them in earlier days. We had the chance now to continue her work, and to carry on as we knew she had been able to do in her youth. We were just exhausted that night, but grateful to know that all the donkeys were now safely in care. We were going to clear as many of the donkey huts from the sanctuary at Reading as we could and transport them down to Ottery St. Mary. Paul, who had broken up from school, and Mr. Rivers, who had previously worked there, and his son, offered to help as well. I ran Paul back up to Reading with a tent, and he settled in to start the long job of clearing the site. But what had appeared sound buildings had in fact been erected many years ago, and when dismantled, mostly just broke to pieces, and the huts were almost worthless. Paul spent 3 weeks on the site clearing up, lighting bonfires and generally trying to put the place back straight to comply with the stipulations laid down on the leasing of the property. Back for a well-earned weekend's rest, having been camping out rough, he came to join the family for a sail on the Sunday on one of our precious family outings. Minutes before we were due to leave, and with a picnic all packed, we heard a horrible shout from outside and found Paul lying by the gate in the yard. He had decided to vault it, and as he put one hand on it to leap over, the gate clicked open, with the result that he fell very heavily. He had broken his shoulder bone, and all thoughts of sailing vanished for the day, as we had to rush him to Exeter Orthopaedic Hospital for X-rays and to have it set. That was the end of Paul's help as far as Reading was concerned, and he was in considerable pain for the next week, unable to move around at all. The day after Paul's accident, when I was feeling particularly depressed, I was out grooming in the yard when a strange man appeared, passed an envelope to me, having ascertained that I was Mrs. Fenson, and then vanished before I had time to open it. It was the first time I had been issued with a writ, and it was on behalf of Mr. Light, claiming that a sum of £3,910, with reference to donkeys supplied to Miss Philpin by him, was unpaid. The letter went straight on to our lawyer, John Lovell, and between us we wrote a letter back stating that we were fully prepared to meet all the debts incurred by Miss Philpin, which were substantiated, but that, dealing with money that had been donated by the public, both we and the charity commissioners had to be fully satisfied about all claims met. Miss Philpin always paid dealers in cash, apparently, and the dealers refused to leave the donkeys if cash wasn't received. We pointed out that we would consider the claim when the two charities had been amalgamated. In the post that morning, I received a letter from the Charity Commission saying that the amalgamation of the two charities would be formally established on the 10th of September, when the new trustees would become liable for all outstanding charity bills owed by Miss Philpin. A telephone call a few moments after the writ came announced that a group of 11 donkeys were coming in from Henley. That really did a lot to cheer me up. They were some of Miss Philpin's donkeys, who had been out in good homes, and they proved to be some of the most unusual character donkeys we had ever had in. They arrived in extremely good condition, and two of them were absolutely jet black in colour. One was Sebastian, and the other Treacle. Treacle was half Sebastian's size and had a terrible hunched back. Despite that, he was absolutely full of charm as far as humans were concerned, and energy as far as donkeys were concerned. He ordered all the other donkeys about, and from the moment he walked into the big barn at Farway, he took control. If Treacle said nobody was going to eat anything until he'd had some, not one donkey would move. Even today, Treacle controls a group of 60 geldings out at one of our large farms. And it was at about this time that I first heard directly from a man I shall call Mr. Bloggs. He lived near Bristol and had looked after 22 donkeys for about the last 3 years for Miss Philpin, for each of which he was receiving £2 a week for keep. He had read of Miss Philpin's death in the newspaper and was not surprised when I rang him to ask if I could come out and see the donkeys and take them back to the sanctuary. The charity owed him a great deal of money, he said, and I assured him that once we were in a position to pay, we would do so. I arranged to call and see him on the 8th of September, on my way back from Stoneleigh, where the Donkey Breed Society was holding its show. I called in to see Mr. and Mrs. Bloggs at their little cottage 2 days before the charities were amalgamated. They were just starting Sunday lunch. We discussed the donkeys, which they said were in a nearby field. I'd pick them up with the wagon the following day, I said, and they had no objections at all. Provided the donkeys were in good shape, their cheque would come as soon as the amalgamation went through, and the Bloggs seemed quite happy about things. Colin Pleese again contracted to do the journey, and he set off with his wagon to pick up the 22 donkeys. I was discussing my problems with Rosalind de Wesselo, who was staying with us, when the telephone rang. It was Judith Forbes. "Betty, the wagon's just arrived. Please come at once. It's absolutely terrible. I just can't believe my eyes." It was unlike Judith to panic. "Whatever's the matter?" I asked. "You should just see the state of these donkeys, Betty. It is absolutely appalling. Please come quickly." We jumped into the car and drove round to Farway. Two of the donkeys were in the most frightful condition I had ever seen. We named the poor little things Hansel and Gretel. Unable to stand up unaided, they were walking skeletons covered with filth and lice. The other 20 were not much better. We immediately rang the RSPCA. I was determined to make a case of these animals, particularly as the trust had been paying £2 a week for their care. And for courtesy's sake, we told Mrs. Bloggs of our action. Photographs of them were taken while the RSPCA were present, and then began the desperate job of starting their recovery. Hansel and Gretel had small amounts of warm bran mash, and we put out hay for them before quietly leaving them in a deeply bedded box to recover from the journey. We all doubted they would be alive in the morning, but peace and quiet was essential if they were to have any chance. Mr. Bloggs must have got the name of our transporter, and from him Judith Forbes' phone number. He wanted the address where the donkeys were so he could pick them up again the next day, as he understood we weren't going to pay him. Panic. I advised the police, who were marvellous, and having seen the photographs of the donkeys, stationed themselves nearby As far as we know, it was just an idle threat. Poor Hansel and Gretel, back to Salston Close they came as soon as they were fit to travel, and we became extremely fond of them. I managed to clip away most of the large infected areas of hair and skin, and gradually they became less terrified and more handleable as they realised that their lifestyle had undergone a drastic change. The case against Mr. Bloggs came up on the 9th of December, and with Niels, our veterinary surgeon, and the RSPCA, all of whom were to give evidence, we arrived at the court in good time. I got so angry as I heard the evidence given in defence of Mr. Bloggs about the beautiful treatment the animals had received, the veterinary care, so on and so forth. Both Mr. and Mrs. Bloggs were found guilty under the Protection of Animals Act 1911 and fined the maximum penalty of £50 each. Zebedee was our other donkey in the group who ran into problems. I called him Zebedee because he had very distinctive striped legs, almost like a zebra. From the moment he came, he was extremely weak and had large ulcerous sores all over his body. The vet and Niels rigged a sling to support him as he was too weak to stand on his own, and constant lying down was rubbing the ulcers, which must have been extremely painful for him. Poor Zebedee had come too late, and after one last night's desperate struggle, he died. We lost three more of the group before the year was out, due to their long period of starvation and lack of care. The death of a donkey always affects me deeply. I always feel that in some way I have failed the animal, and in Zebedee's case, even though I had had him so short a time, I felt I ought to have been able to do more for him in some way. Poor old Niels had another sleepless night trying to comfort me.